everyone, and welcome to Film Geek Time Machine. I'm your host, Austin Kennedy.
I'm Tim Kaiser. Hello, friends.
Hello.
Not you, friends.
Oh.
Not people I'm sitting next to.
Friends. Yeah, this is the podcast where we go back in time in my time machine and go to random dates and have a movie marathon while we're back in time, while we theater hop and go to different theaters. This time we went to September 23rd, 1967.
Before I was even born.
Yes.
Long ago, I wasn't even around
yet. Whoa. 1 year before.
Yeah. A little less than a year before I was born.
Right. Yes. So let's go to 1967. What do we got? The top songs. The number one song, To Sir With Love,
yes,
by Lulu.
And I had no recollection of ever having heard that song before.
Did they ever play that song during the movie? I wonder.
Let's see. I wonder if they just said, let's going to change the name of the movie to that song because it's the only movie, it's the only music that exists in that universe,
right,
is that song.
Yeah, we're only going to play the song four times.
Yeah, and
also, sometimes within minutes apart.
And somehow it's part of the plot of the movie.
We also have The Letter by the Box Tops, Apple Peaches Pumpkin Pie. I know that one.
I know that one.
Never My Love, Ode to Billy Joe, Brown Eyed Girl. We got Reflections, Higher and Higher.
Music used to be good, Austin.
Yes. Come Back When You Grow Up, Bobby V. I Dig Rock and Roll Music, Peter, Paul, and Mary.
I also dig rock and roll music.
Turtles are
that was
in there.
A song.
So yeah, it was the height of kind of like the rock and roll kind of thing, the Rolling Stones.
It's the
Animals.
Is 60s.
Yeah.
60s popular music.
Yeah. That was pretty good. For the TV shows, we're looking at Saturday because we were on a Saturday. We have The Dating Game.
Is that the one with I wonder if that's the episode with the serial killer.
Right. Did you see the movie yet?
No, I haven't. I've heard
the Anna Kendrick film.
I have not.
She directed it, which makes me really want
to
see it.
It's supposed to be good.
I want
to
check it out.
I mean, that guy was scary. He killed possibly more than you can ever know.
Right.
He killed a shit ton of people.
So The Dating Game, The Newlywed Game, The Lawrence Welk Show.
Jackie Gleason Show. Yep. Is that one of the one of the variety act shows?
They did have Iron Horse, which was a Western. My Three Sons, Hogan's Heroes, Petticoat Junction, Mannix, Maya, and then Get Smart.
So before they had the Jackie Gleason Show, in the summer, they were showing the UK show, Prisoner?
This would have been later on in 68. This is the 67-68 season, so this is the fall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so later on, next year they played The Prisoner. Yeah,
fascinating.
The Patrick McGowan.
Yeah.
Then The Saint, they also showed the Roger Moore.
Oh, okay.
Movie. But anyways, yeah.
Cool.
So, and then let's take a look at the newspaper, because we always look at the newspaper before we go back in time, and we're going to look at what we didn't see. There was a bunch of drive-in movies. There was some biker movies. There's Hell on Wheels and the Wild Rebels.
Don't forget, Austin, we have to go to the very front page
and
see what today's news
is. We'll do that.
I have come up with a thing, and it has only mostly failed. But I want it to be a success.
We didn't see A Guide for the Married Man. That was one that we were almost going to
see. We almost saw it.
It was a Walter Matthau and directed by Gene Kelly.
And it also says Lucille Ball's in it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I'm like, I wish I'd have seen that movie.
There's a movie called Doctor, You've Gotta Be Kidding, with Sandra Dee and George Hamilton.
Not with my wife, you don't.
Not with my
wife,
whatever
the hell that is.
I don't know. Oh, the 1967 Casino Royale.
Oh.
Actually, there was a double, because Raquel Welch is, Ursula Andress.
We had the option to see
1 Million BC.
Shitty Casino Royale. We could have
seen
that.
I've never seen it in its entirety. I've seen bits and pieces.
You've only ever seen the Woody Allen parts. I know you.
I've seen some of the Woody Allen parts.
I know
you have.
Yeah. If I knew anything, the only parts of that movie you've ever seen, it's like, why would I ever want to watch Orson Welles be insane?
So
I want to watch Woody Allen be horrible.
There are two Julie Andrews movies we didn't see. An Americanization of the Americanization of Emily and Hawaii. There was another one that we did see.
We did see. We could have made this the Ollie
Julie Andrews.
It could have been the Julie Andrews version of my birthday episode.
Yeah, I would have been okay with that.
All Dean.
Grand Prix, we didn't see. The Family Way. The Taming of the Shrew, which is Shakespeare, Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton. Man for All Seasons. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which I need to see that sometime. I've never seen it. The Great Race was playing again, but we already seen it.
Yeah, we've seen it pretty recently.
John Wayne in the War Wagon. There's Hatari, HUD, Riot on the Sunset Strip.
But lots of movies we could have seen.
Dr. Zhivago.
And then we still did see six movies that we haven't mentioned yet.
We saw seven movies.
We saw seven movies, Austin?
Yes, we did.
Wow.
Did you watch seven movies?
I can't count.
Okay.
You
so,
named them all, and I heard them all. I knew all those names, and I had recently watched them, so I assumed
starting
yes.
Right at 10 a.m., we have Two for the Road, which is a romantic drama, or not even a romantic, a relationship drama, directed by Stanley Donen, who did co-directed Singin' in the Rain, and then starring Audrey Hepburn
is
and
that the
Albert
guy,
Finney.
Is he the one who only died recently?
Yeah.
Wow,
Stanley Donen.
Crazy.
He also did Seven Brides for Seven Brothers as well.
Oh, wow.
Lee Marvin, first of two Lee Marvin films. There was another Lee Marvin movie called The Professionals we didn't see.
And weirdly, I think I may have had seen that one
the
before.
The Professionals? That one was awesome, yeah. Point Blank is a John Borman film who directed The Deliverance, so it's a thriller. And then you have Thoroughly Modern Millie, Julie Andrews, Mary Tyler Moore, and Carol Channing in a big budget musical from the director who later on went to direct The Sting and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, George Roy Hill.
Correct. I don't want to talk about any of these movies yet. Austin.
Yeah. The Trip, Roger Corman film about Peter Fonda taking acid.
Yes.
To Sir With Love, which is a Sidney Poitier movie where he's a teacher in British with urban city kids.
It's a teacher movie.
Yeah, it's a teacher movie. The Dirty Dozen, which is obviously Lee Marvin,
the
World
Dirty
War
Dozen.
II. It's The Dirty
if you
Dozen.
You haven't heard of The Dirty Dozen, what the fuck are you listening to this podcast for? You've never heard of movies.
And then probably the one that's probably the least known on here is Don't Make Waves with Tony Curtis.
Yes. I would actually say this is almost certainly the least known one.
Yeah. Tony Curtis and then Claudia Claudini.
And Sharon Tate.
And Sharon Tate. Yeah. Introducing Sharon Tate.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about that in an hour and 49 minutes. That's my guess. Okay?
That's your guess? Okay. So our first movie is... Nope. We're going to do the headlines.
Oh, headlines.
I'm doing the
headlines. What page? God damn it. I mentioned it earlier.
We're doing the headlines.
What was today's biggest... Well, kind of previous... Yesterday's biggest news. Okay?
September 23rd, 1967. Here we go. The front page says... Oh, shit.
Oh,
here we
Vietnam
go.
Vietnam War is worth sacrifice, Johnson says.
That is incorrect.
Wow. Wow.
That was
LBJ.
A heavy. That was a heavy one.
Fucking J.
Oh, geez. LBJ likens Negro's plight to immigrants.
Yeah, well, he was actually pretty good on the. He was very on the pro civil rights side.
HRA asks.
Except for the part where he hated all of Vietnam. Okay.
Right. HRA asks North Side Renewal. On Plymouth Avenue. Look at that. Rebuilding.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is local news stuff.
That is, but it's still headlines. And then Bolivia presents proof Guevara aids guerrillas.
Okay, whatever.
And then they have twins defeat
Yankees.
Vietnam
War is worth sacrifice, Johnson says.
That's crazy.
It's also, take a look at like the way they put that headline on there.
Yeah.
Not that anybody listening to this is ever going to see that headline.
Yeah.
It is weirdly spaced.
Yeah,
and it's like they had to fill room on their banner and said, I don't know, space is stupid, so it looks dumb.
It's the guy who wrote it. Charles Bailey didn't write enough text on it, so they
and they couldn't like just make it wider,
right?
So they just said offset everything and make it look stupid.
All right, our first movie is Two for the Road. Now I've never seen this. This is regarded as a good movie. People like this film. It was I think. AFI did, maybe like 20 years ago or so, did a top 50 romance films, and this made the list.
Really?
Actually, yes.
Wow. Can we get a noose for those people? What the fuck, man?
Oh, no.
There's no romance in this movie. It's a movie about two people who fucking hate each other.
Right. They get married, and I don't know. So
there's no chemistry, because there's no chemistry with the person. I hate him. I fucking hate him.
Albert, you know what? I knew that as soon as
God,
I was watching
I fucking
this movie.
Hate him.
As soon as I watched this movie, I'm like, God dang it.
God, I fucking hate him.
And
I'm like, this movie's told weirdly jump around, which would be cool if I wasn't filled with seething hatred for the entire fucking movie.
So this was definitely influenced by, and what you're going to see here, and I'm gonna mention this, I'll probably mention it again. In 1967, this was a kind of the beginning of this film renaissance that kind of went through the mid-70s. And it was a lot of these Hollywood directors were being influenced by French New Wave and all of these foreign films and stuff. So they're trying new techniques in Hollywood films. Usually in Hollywood films, it's just like over the shoulder, over the shoulder. And most of these films that we're going to see have a lot of these stylish flourishes.
Two of them, really.
I would say the first four, I would say, have a lot of stylistic flourishes. But I mean,
I think the first two are the most extreme.
Yeah.
With,
let's
make sure we get good reviews from critics, is what they're saying. I want to get good reviews from critics, and I don't give a shit if random people show up and like this movie at all.
Well, the thing is, though, I mean, it was brand new, so they didn't know if it would work with the critics yet. So this is like a new style that people were experimenting with.
Well, it did, because I checked.
These movies
are highly rated.
Like, for sure.
I did not like this movie, mostly because I fucking hated him.
No.
I actually think it's actually pretty well made in general.
I think it's very well made. So.
I think it is.
I actually liked it quite a bit. So.
But I actually was watching this, and I was like thinking, well, Austin's going to really like this movie, but boy, do I fucking hate it.
So, yes, this is, and you know what, though? I don't necessarily think, I mean, we haven't talked about synopsis yet. I don't necessarily think you're really supposed to like anybody. To me, it was really just interesting watching two people, how they went on through the years and how they evolved. So I kind of found it fascinating in a way.
But my thing was, it starts off and they're like been married for a while.
Yeah.
And they're being really asshole-y to each other. Which I'm like, okay. And then it jumps back and I'm like, okay, now they're going to show back when they liked each other. No, they still seem to hate each other. But for some reason, they're going to get married. And then she starts fucking bawling her head off.
Yeah.
And he says, I love you. And so she turned, and she was literally running away.
Yeah.
And he goes, I love you. And she turns around and gives a big hug. And I'm like, everything's fine. And I'm like, I fucking hate this fucking movie.
So
he's such a fucking piece of shit, Austin. He treats her like garbage to such a degree that she starts treating him like garbage.
And it only
made me happy.
Right.
Good, you deserve it.
Well, and then she has an affair later on. And whatever.
Who gives a shit?
If she shot him
and buried him alive, I would have only been happy.
I thought it was interesting. So it starts, you know, when they're, you know, taking this trip together or whatever, and they're just like, eh. And then you see them when they're on another trip, and yet I actually think there is a little bit of a difference. They are still kind of being mean to each other, but there's a certain affection. Like when they're at the beach, you know what I mean?
There's a way to do it. I'm actively mean to you, Austin.
Yay.
Everybody who listens to those knows that I am mean to you. But I love you, buddy.
Yeah.
You're one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah.
Except for when you make me watch this movie, okay? Then I'm sitting there going, how do I kill Austin and get away with it, okay? I have six more fucking movies to watch.
Oh, no.
How do I murder Austin, okay?
And leave him back in 1967.
Yes. How do I make sure the time machine still works? And then I can cheat and give myself stock tips in 1980.
The movie, with the drop of a dime, within 1 second, will jump, you know, 10 years back. It'll go 5 years back. But it doesn't.
Well, actually, I think there's only two real time periods. And both of them are kind of both. That was a thing that I had an issue with.
No.
I wasn't certain.
Like, I would say there's like three or four different timelines.
Yeah, see, I wasn't sure.
So there's some that was happening, like, you know.
I thought one was them at the beginning where they were married. And then the rest of it was just a linear time movement of their other relationship.
It would jump forward in the middle, like when they were on a vacation with that couple and that kid. Yeah, you
know, with the voice of Kit, yes.
Yep. And then,
By the way, voice of Kit's in this movie!
Yep.
That makes not a zero-star movie.
And
okay?
Then, and then it goes back to the beginning, and then it goes back to, then it goes to the end. So I would say there's like three solid story or timelines that are.
See, I wasn't clear, and that's one of my issues. I'm like, maybe I'm just not paying attention because of the tears.
So
flowing down my face.
There is a trilogy Richard Linklater did called, it's the Before series, so it's Before Sunrise, Before
I've
Sunset.
I've heard of those. I haven't seen them.
And Before Midnight. They're brilliant. And Before Midnight.
Are they as brilliant as School of Rock?
I like them better, yeah.
You're fucking wrong. School of Rock's perfection, okay?
So those movies are great. And what this is, to me, this was almost like all three of those movies in one movie. Because Before Sunrise is when they meet. Before Sunset's okay. in the middle, and then Before Midnight is but when they've been married told, for 20 years.
First you see this, then yes. you see this, right. then you see this. This says...
This is like you put them in a blender.
Put them in a blender and get confused, and you don't know who it is because they never look any different, okay? They wear different clothing.
No. Her hair is definitely different.
It's like a different hairstyle. I wouldn't
it's
call
short.
It...
It's short. She has long hair, and then at one point...
So what you're saying is hair, yeah. when she is younger she has is when hair. She has long hair, yeah. and when she's older, which they could represent with hair being longer, they just decide to go shorter.
It's
stupid, Austin.
No, it's the style.
Dumb. I understand.
Of the late 60s makes
I understand.
Sense.
Yeah, but in actuality, they don't look any fucking older. Okay. She has a different hairstyle. I could put a wig on, Austin. I'm not gonna look younger or older. I'm gonna look dumb. Okay.
Because there's a lot of like conflicts, a lot of arguments in this movie, and I found it fascinating. How they evolved, how they got together, and going back and forth and comparing the different timelines and how they evolved and came back and how they finally come back together. Do I agree? Do I think they should be together? No, I don't. In real life, people that are together shouldn't be together. I found this a fascinating study.
Correct.
So
correct,
I enjoyed
correct.
It. I think Audrey Hepburn does a great job. Albert Finney's good. Not a likable character necessarily, but I like Audrey Hepburn quite a lot in this movie.
I actually like Albert Finney is really good in this movie.
Yeah.
To such a degree that I'm like, was Albert Finney a piece of shit? Was he garbage human being?
Apparently not.
I suspect he might have been.
No, I don't think so.
Just a horrible monster in real life and said, I'm going to go method in one movie and then spend the rest of my life being a fucking psychopath because that's what happened maybe. I don't know.
So it's confirmed later on, but it was confirmed that they had, during filming, they had an affair during this film.
They're really good at acting like they don't like each other.
I don't know. I think they're
good. I mean, how can you not like Audrey Hepburn?
Yeah. Okay. I think they're really good together and how they call each other like, you bitch, you bastard, you know.
Yes.
Like, I thought that was cool. Again.
Is this one of the movies?
Technically.
I'm trying to think.
I love the film technically.
This is not one of the movies. Okay, we got two movies in here where the word slut is missing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the first time in any of our episodes, and I'm like, how did this happen twice?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, technically, coming from a film school background, I loved all the camera movements, the editing.
Well, there was a lot of cool transition shots.
With a lot of the car, and
then suddenly you're like, oh, we're in the new time zone.
Yeah.
The new time. And it made sense. And I'm like, boy, Austin, love that. That happened in my head. That was in my head so often. I'm like,
God damn it,
Austin, love that.
Oh, I was just.
I just don't want to watch this movie anymore, but God damn it, Austin loves it.
Yeah, I was fascinated with it. So I'm giving it a 3.5.
I'm not going to go 0, but it's close. It's 1.5.
Okay.
It is well made.
Yeah.
A couple things we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
Animated credits. We got to talk about this episode.
Oh, and
there's
Henry
another
Mancini.
Movie with animated credits, and Henry Mancini did the music, which is great.
Great score. Yeah.
Another reason why I can't go 0.
Yeah.
I have a whole bunch of notes here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in here and just say a couple of them. He has a terrible vibe. That's one of my notes. And then we're going to come down here, and it says, oh, wow, I hate this kid. I forgot. There was a fucking... That little girl was fucking annoying as fuck.
Right?
Okay?
Yeah.
God damn, was she ever fucking irritating.
Absolutely. But supposed to be.
Yeah. No. Actively supposed to be. It made sense.
Yeah.
It's actually... It was one of the things where I'm like, well, maybe he's not so bad. He didn't kill that kid. And I feel like he probably wanted to kill that kid. And then it says, he is so unlikable. I hate this fucking movie. This could only end in murder.
Good job.
I was correct. It ended in murder. Spoiler alert, she kills him.
That is incorrect.
Oh, damn it. Damn it, what a better movie.
Our next movie is Point Blank.
Point Blank.
And Lee Marvin. I love Lee Marvin. He's awesome in this.
It's hard to hate Lee Marvin.
Yeah, he's just...
He's in two of these movies. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty fucking awesome in both those movies.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. So this is an American crime film. Definitely feels like a foreign film, but when you watch
it. Yes. It also likes to do flashbacks, but in a very different way.
Not super unlike Two for the Road.
Well, Two for the Road would do, like, time jumps. This is when there's a flashback. Well, the whole movie, the beginning of it is like this weird...
Well, the pre-title sequence is
it's essentially a flashback to a betrayal.
First shot of the movie.
This is a revenge movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. First shot of the movie, it's from that when he's in that club. And, like, that red light's on him. And then it does that zoom on him. And then you hear a gunshot. And all of a sudden, he's in prison. And he gets... Or in that prison cell in Alcatraz. And he gets shot twice. And then...
And I'm actively, like,
right.
Because I had just watched Two for the Road, I'm like, is this the end of the movie? Does he die at the end of this movie and they show us the fucking end of the movie? That could be what happened.
And then,
okay,
it immediately goes to a flashback of John Vernon, who plays his friend, to get him to do this kind of heist thing.
They don't really, as far as I could tell, they don't super explain. The flashbacks are there, but I never got, like, explanation of their actual history.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They're like, oh, they seem to be good friends, and I'm like, where'd they actually meet? This isn't when they met. This is when they.
This is John Vernon again. He was in Topaz, but he's also the dean in Animal House and the mayor in Dirty Harry. He's back again. And
this is at least a better movie than Topaz.
Oh yeah.
Don't bring up Topaz.
No. It had good moments.
Yeah, for sure.
Roscoe Lee Brown. That's what this movie needed.
Roscoe Lee Brown ups this thing by a star, okay?
Actually, Roscoe Lee Brown in every movie.
Every movie, I'd somehow go past 4 stars if Roscoe Lee Brown showed up in Big Hand for Little Lady, okay? Oh, 5-star movie!
But yeah, so what happens is, so he gets left for dead after he's, because they're going to rip off some other people, and he's doing it with his wife, and then his wife betrays him. He ends up surviving, and he escapes Alcatraz Island, because Alcatraz has been closed for like 3 or 4 years at this point.
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah. It was early 60s when they closed it.
So that's where they like...
It was already like a tourist trap probably by this point.
Right, so, but at Alcatraz, they were having like drug deals or money exchanges or whatever.
Which seems weird. I've been to Alcatraz. Yeah. It is fully just a tourist trap.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't go there and do shit. It's full of like touristy shit, okay?
Right. And so what happens is Lee Marvin, he survives and now he's trying to get his money. He estimated $93,000. That's what he wants. He wants his money back.
Pretty good amount of money in 1967.
When he shows up at his ex-wife's house and he just pretty much puts her in a headlock, opens the door and just boom, 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 and just shoots the bed. I was like, holy shit, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was really awesome. This movie has shit in it that I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
This is 1967. Yeah. They said, let's get rid of the code, and then we're going to go all the way to crazy. We're going to the most extreme violence you ever fucking seen.
Okay? So this definitely, it's super stylish, and it's a revenge movie, but it's more than just John Vernon. There's a guy that John Vernon's working for.
It gets pretty complicated, actually.
Right. And so he can't get his money from John Vernon, so he has to get this money from another guy, And then Carol O'Connor shows up.
Yeah.
And then
Carol O'Connor was pretty awesome.
Then Keenan Wynn, who seems like some kind of federal agent or police officer that's kind of assisting him, but spoiler alert, he's the bad guy in the movie.
Yeah. There's a lot of bad guys in this movie.
including Lee Marvin.
I'm not sure there is a good guy in this movie.
Okay? And then
Lee Marvin, although here's the thing, we just called it a revenge movie.
Yeah.
Lee Marvin really just wants that money.
Yeah.
He actively doesn't kill the guy who shot him.
Nope.
He gets killed still. But it wasn't from Lee Marvin.
And that was, you know, for 1967, that effect of him falling naked, that was pretty awesome,
There was that, and let me see here. Oh, yeah. There's a fight in this that's like a long shot in the shadow, and he, like, Lee Marvin, like, rails this guy's nuts.
Was that at
like,
the...
Like, pow, pow, pow! And I'm like, holy fuck, that looks tough. No, I think it was, like, in the upstairs thing.
Okay.
I think, or no, maybe it might have been in the club.
That
can't
fight at the club was really awesome.
6 movies ago, Austin. Yeah. I don't remember shit.
That fight in the club was really awesome, but
there's also...
Yeah.
There's another fight where right in the middle of the fight, they flash back to a thing, and I'm like, what the fuck? Why'd they do that flashback? I don't understand sometimes what's going on in this movie. But, like, you're right. It's an experiment. I've seen this in some French movie. Let's throw a flashback in here, okay?
Yeah.
It's artsy-fartsy flashbackery.
That's what it is.
Artsy-fartsy flashbackery.
Again, definitely influenced by the French New Wave. And what's kind of neat, John Borman, when he came aboard, Lee Marvin had full say on this film. Because he got full directorial approval and everything.
He did. Yeah. Did he approve of that singer?
Oh, I don't know.
Remember that singer?
Hell yeah.
That guy, he was like, was it rapping? I don't know what that guy was doing, okay? He was like in a Godfather of Soul. What's his name? Chuck Berry.
Yeah.
But only when he does the parts of songs. The entire song was that, okay? It's like, but it was like, this has been 5 minutes, and that's the entire fucking song. I both was like, this is the most confusing and fantastically confusing song I've ever fucking heard, but I don't, like, want to listen to it or anything, but it is amazing.
So this is interesting. So when they agreed to work on the film, Lee Marvin, I'm reading this, discarded the script and called a meeting with the head of the studio because he didn't like the script. And the producers, his agent, and John Borman. And Marvin said, I have script approval? And they said, yes. And then Lee Marvin says, do I have approval of the principal cast? Yes, they said. And then Lee Marvin goes, I defer all those approvals to John Borman. And he walked out. So John Borman pretty much, Lee Marvin essentially gave John Borman final cut on this picture.
Weird. So John Borman is the one who hired Angie Dickinson?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whose role in this is confusing to a degree. Yeah, yeah, yeah. At the end of it, she shows up again, and I'm like, why is Angie here? She doesn't do anything in the scene. Yeah. Okay, whatever.
So, yeah, it kind of gets a little muddled towards the end of the film. But it's
still cool.
No, it's a cool movie. It's super stylish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. Sid Haig has a small role as one of one of the guards that stand outside John Vernon's hotel.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, there's Sid Haig.
Oh, cool. Here's a weird thing that's happening right now, Austin. I remember not liking this movie very much. And we talk about it, I'm like, this movie's pretty fucking good. So I don't know.
Oh, no, I like this movie.
I know. After the first one, I'm like, God, Austin's going to like this fucking movie. And for some reason, I'm finding... I ended up keying on the shit that I found just, like, baffling decisions. But the
actual movie itself is pretty cool. It's not perfect.
And the script, I think, are good. I think there's the occasional filmmaking... gaff, okay?
So, actually, that's where I kind of disagree, because I thought that if you would have just made this a standard way, it would have been like, oh, it's just another standard plot.
No, you're right.
But when you make it with, like, all these weird zooms and flash cut edits, sometimes
the flashbacks just baffled me.
And the framing.
And the entire pre-credits thing, which is there, and I'm like, well, they'll explain it, and I'm like, well, they never explain a fucking
word of
that.
There's just some great shots in the movie. Like, one shot early on when Lee Marvin is walking down, like, this hallway, and it's just...
Oh, there's some fantastic... There's also fantastic use of shadows in this.
Yep, for sure.
Really fantastic.
Definitely is, like, a modern film noir, almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are times when you can't actually see the edge of the frame.
Yeah.
Because there are just other shadows that make for a different framing of the shot.
I agree.
I'm like, fuck, that is really cool.
No, if you like cool movies and you're interested in filmmaking and you like stylistic flourishes.
This is a movie for filmmakers who also want to see Lee Marvin punch a guy in the dick.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, Lee Marvin is awesome in this movie too. So no, it's a 3 for me. I'm going to go
2.5.
Okay.
Not quite as high as you.
Okay.
Not yet.
Thoroughly Modern Millie. Oh shit, here we go.
I'm giving a big thumbs up.
If you... are familiar with the podcast, then you know that me and especially Tim are big fans of musicals.
I have never seen this movie, Austin.
And I have. I said one word to you before this movie started.
Yeah?
And what was it? Do you remember? I'm like, Tim, I just have one thing to say
this
movie
Julie
starts.
Did you say Julie Andrews or something?
Nope, I went, raspberries!
Oh, raspberries!
That's all I said.
Oh, that's all you said. And I'm like, what the fuck?
And then you watch?
Actually, it takes a surprising amount of the movie.
Yeah.
Maybe an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh. Then I'm like, I understand why Austin said it. I still don't understand why it's in the movie. And I don't fucking care.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is a musical directed by George Rahill. Julie Andrews. It's in 1922. So it takes place...
I'm sorry.
In the 20s?
I love this fucking movie.
No, it's awesome. No, I knew you would, and I'm very happy. That's why I was very happy that
this
you picked
This is the
it.
Reason you're not dead right now, Austin, okay? Because I wanted to kill you so badly.
So, she plays Millie, she's always trying to be modern, get the latest styles, get the brassieres, gets the...
Yes,
you know,
in the 20s.
Yeah.
It's where small bosoms are in.
Yes.
She has a small bosom for about a minute.
Yeah.
She still isn't like a big chested
lady.
No. She's just Julie Andrews with normal boobs.
Right,
okay?
right. But yeah, it's just she cuts her hair, all that stuff. And she lives in a building for young women, right?
Yes, I guess that's what it is.
Yeah.
The same, think of the bosom buddy's house.
Yeah.
If you're old people like us.
Yeah.
But the bosom buddy's house
that
Tom Hanks and What's-His-Face lived in.
Yep.
Posing as ladies.
Yeah.
They live there.
Yep. So
except for there's no Tom Hanks. Okay.
There's no Tom Hanks.
Luckily, because those are fucking boy. You know that movie that show doesn't fucking hold up. Those people.
I kind of want to watch
should
it.
Should not live in that place, posing as women. That's done here. Also, let's watch some bosom buddies.
Yeah.
Okay?
Then a new young lady shows up, played by Mary Tyler Moore, who kind of has a weird. Like I've never heard her
She's
talk like
weird.
That in a movie. Right.
She is weird. In the credits, it shows. It shows Julie Andrews.
Yep.
It says Mary Tyler Moore and Carol Channing is in there.
And James Fox.
And stuff like that. Yeah, it says that. And I'm like, oh, Mary Tyler Moore is in this. Cool. And Julie Andrews. Awesome. And then Mary Tyler Moore shows up. And I'm like, I just expected to immediately fall in love with Mary Tyler Moore, and she's kind of weird. Okay?
She is, yeah.
But then they get in the elevator, and I'm like, yep, I'm in love with Mary Tyler Moore!
So this elevator that they have doesn't work unless you dance in it, well, essentially.
Well, I think you just need to vibrate it, but dancing is how you can do it if you're cool.
So they just tap dance and do
this
great dancing.
The whole conversation while they're doing this crazy dance number.
Yeah.
Going up a few floors.
Yep.
It actually seems to work fine if nobody's in the elevator.
Yeah.
So it really makes no fucking sense, but yeah. I don't give a shit. I leaned over to the woman next to me.
Yeah.
A woman who I've never met and certainly isn't a friend of ours. Not possible. A random stranger woman. And I said, this is the greatest scene in film fucking history. When they were dancing on that
elevator.
Thing, I'm like, holy shit. I couldn't stand up right now because you'd see my erection. Okay?
And then you have James Fox, who is a love interest that comes in. Julie Andrews is determined to marry her boss,
businessman. That's her old plan. Get a job, marry your boss. Okay.
Yep. And James Fox kind of ruins that because she falls in love with James Fox.
Yeah, but she's also trying to act like, I'm a super modern woman.
Yeah.
I'm progressive and I think women are equal to men. Also, I'm going to marry a random guy who I haven't met yet only because he's my boss. And I'm like, those two messages are very contradictory to one another.
And that was played by John Gavin.
Yes.
Who's the boss. John Gavin was also in, he was Janet Leigh's boyfriend in Psycho that goes looking for her.
Oh, okay.
So that's John Gavin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he's a very pretty man that just doesn't...
Oh, yes. He is the John Hamm of that time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You get John Hamm now,
sure.
You're like, that guy is a good-looking human being.
That's
that
right.
guy is a good-looking human being. Okay?
And then James Fox, he's friends with a society woman played by Carol Channing. And they go to this party.
Yep.
And that's where Raspberries comes
in. She just says Raspberries at that point.
And so she's in her 40s.
But she says it for Carol Channing.
Yeah, yeah. And she talks with a lisp. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And
but
so,
I'm like, holy shit.
She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress in this
movie. I'm going to tell you why. This movie is the reason we all love Carol Channing.
She is so good in this movie. And she's so adorable and so cute.
She's so adorable.
And just,
and she has a musical number. This movie.
She has two of them.
This movie is a musical, but not as musical as other musicals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are dancing numbers, and there are singing numbers, and actually, in this, they are actually singing. In other musicals, you can at least imagine, this isn't really happening, this is, like, a fantasy version of the world. No, in this, they're fucking singing and dancing because it makes sense of the plot.
Now,
okay?
And her song, Jazz Baby, is just awesome. It's so great.
And it was like, I've been taking lessons for a week. And then I'm like, oh yeah, you're the best thing in the world.
What's great about her character is that she wants to do everything. So she skydives, she flies a plane, she does. And she's rich.
She's a rich widow.
And she has
all the money in the world.
And she has all the instructors to teach her everything. I'm presumably that she is sleeping with all of them.
Yes, it would appear that every man that is her employee is actually just a guy stooping her, okay?
Which is great, and they make it, like, okay, and it's free,
fine.
And it's awesome.
Yep, it's just like, interesting.
Okay, so you have kind of, like, this romance thing going on between the two couples.
Oh,
we haven't
mentioned the actual, like,
I'm getting there. So, there is...
Which actually, I think, this movie starts with,
Like, right, we'll get there. But, so, Mary Tyler Moore, but then you're like... Oh, is James Fox and Mary Tyler Moore? Because they kind of have scenes where it looks like that they're romantically involved and Julie Andrews gets jealous. So it goes back and forth between that. During this whole thing, there is also a subplot that ends up becoming like the big finale of the film. So wherever they're staying at, the headmistress that hosts the woman's house or whatever, Mrs. Mears, played by Beatrice Lilly.
Yes.
She's awesome in this
movie.
She's
really awesome.
Now... What she
and
does.
Nobody in this is in yellow face. It's actual Asian guys.
It almost looks like they yellow face them up a little bit.
They also 20'd people up.
So, before we get to that, though.
I think they whited people up in this movie, too.
Before we get to that, is that what she's doing, she is finding out which of the ladies that are staying at the house don't have any family, and she drugs them and sells them into slavery. Asian slavery ring.
It's called. White slavery?
White slavery.
I'm like, this movie's almost perfect. Just say
and
slavery.
She has,
just say sexual trafficking.
And she has two.
White slavery just is wrong.
And she has two Chinese helpers, billed, credited as Oriental 1 and Oriental number 2.
Oh, God, they haven't got names. Oh, they actually do have names. Ching Ho and
Bung Fu.
But yeah, Oriental number one, Oriental
and
number
Oriental
two.
And Oriental number two is Pat Morita.
Well,
that's Mr.
And
Miyagi.
And Oriental number one is Jack Sue from Hawaii Five-0.
And Barney Miller.
Yeah, and Barney Miller. Oh, is it Barney Miller, not Hawaii Five-0?
It's Barney Miller. I don't know if he was in Hawaii Five-0, but he's definitely Barney Miller.
I might be racist.
But yeah, so Mr. Miyagi's one of the henchmen.
That is awesome, though. Yeah. It's like... Oh, Oscar winner. Future Oscar winner.
Yeah. No, Oscar nominee. He didn't win.
He didn't win? No. He should have fucking won.
Yeah. He should have.
Because now, weirdly, in that movie, which is meh, in it, though, his character has lived a fucking life of terror and tragedy.
In Karate Kid?
In Karate Kid.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies.
He went to the fucking, he was in the U.S. Army, but also he was in an internment camp.
Yeah.
Because I recently read a book, and yes, there were a lot of people who were both in the internment camps, and then when they started running low on young people to put to the army, they said, we're going to go to the internment camps and see if any of them want to got in, okay?
Now, this movie is shot with bright colors, wonderful cinematography, great camera work, creative, stylish camera work, too, like the scene when she, like, sexes up to kind of seduce John Gavin.
Yeah.
Like, she walks out the elevator and the camera, like, goes upside down and turns around.
Oh, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, they did,
but I'm not going to complain about a fucking frame of this movie.
No.
Except for the part where it said white slavery.
And I do love...
It didn't say fucking slavery!
I do love the dance number that they do. What's that dance that they come up with?
Oh, which was great. That would be... Oh, shit. Did I put it on here? Because, yeah, the actual love interest, the real
James
love
Fox,
interest...
James Fox, he's great in the movie, too.
He shows up. And then they have to mention food or something? Chopsticks or something like that?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Why can't I remember the name of that fucking song?
Sauerkraut? No, it's not sauerkraut. That was one they suggested.
That was one he turned down because he couldn't come up with something about tower. Maybe it had the word tap in it.
I don't remember. But anyways. I love? The dance teacher of Carol Channing, who constantly goes, yeah. Yeah, like every time they showed him.
It's so crazy. How had I not seen this movie? Because in actuality, this movie is pretty culturally important.
Yeah.
About the Carol Channing things.
Yeah.
Because she was just a Broadway person before
this
movie, right?
She was terrific, yeah.
And this movie kind of made her, we can put her in movies. She can only play the one role of crazy lady.
No, Julie Andrews is terrific in the film as well.
Yeah. Mary Tyler Moore is in a movie.
One thing.
And she also goes on to be pretty highly renowned.
One thing, and if I call it a flaw, it's a flaw. There's a scene in the
movie. Oh, I forgot. I did mention Bosom Buddies. That kind of does happen at the end.
James Fox. He's great, too. That's great.
He actually passes pretty good for a lady.
Now, there's a scene in the movie when James Fox is climbing the building together. And so there is some... photographic effects.
Oh yeah,
that they do, and she's like hanging out there.
There's now, some of it looks great, and every
some of it doesn't.
I'm like, oh, they fucked that.
And so the thing is, though, 40 years before this, Harold Lloyd in Safety Last, without photographic effects, they could do that.
Yes,
and so they. I don't know. To me, I don't know if that was a
so
lazy
what you're
way
saying
of doing
is,
it.
Unlike the movie that later on we're going to talk about, where a guy making the movie actually did die, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Wanted more people to die making these movies.
No.
Or risk
just...
their lives. I'm sorry, Austin. Don't make people die so you can be entertained for 2.5 hours, okay?
Because it was a throwback to those types of movies, right?
Yes, it was.
And at the same time, it was making me go like, they kind of did it better back then.
Some of it looks pretty good.
Some of it
did. There's one part where he like moves his hand and I'm like, his hand just fucking disappeared.
Yeah.
They fucked that up.
Right.
Just do another take where he doesn't put his hand over there, okay?
No, but other than that, this is a delightful film. It is 2.5 hours long. I did read that.
It flies by.
It does.
Oh, God.
So I did
we watched
read...
another 2.5 hour movie that also flies by. This one flies by fast.
George Roy Hill.
We watched 7 movies. We got 2 2.5 hour movies. We're stupid.
Yeah. The producers wanted it to be a roadshow theatrical release, and they refused to make any artistic cuts that director George Hill wanted to do, so he quit the film before it was scored and finished. So interesting.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I mean, he shot the whole movie, but he wasn't there for the final edit. So, yeah.
Wow.
But it's a great movie.
But
he hasn't
got that weird name on here where because that didn't exist yet. That fake director name. What's it
Alan
called?
Smithy. No. I don't think he was. He just quit because he was probably frustrated. But what he directed is great. It's a 3.5 for me.
This is a 3.5 star movie.
It's a fantastic
this movie,
film.
I was filled with so much joy.
I knew you were gonna like it.
In the entire fucking movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm glad you liked it.
In the entire movie.
Okay, The Trip.
Oh, The Trip.
So,
not going to give this as high rating. Right?
Roger okay. Corman.
I had forgotten Price. This was directed yeah. by Roger Corman.
Yeah.
Until it was like over, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
So Roger Corman, so he directed, you know, all those Vincent so Price
right.
movies.
Sorry. This is the fourth movie? You're right. These first four movies all have French
yeah,
new
yeah,
wave,
yeah,
new
for
wave
sure.
influences.
But this makes sense why it's in here.
This one makes sense. No, but the movie itself doesn't make sense. It makes sense.
it wasn't supposed to make sense.
I know it's not supposed
right,
to.
Right, right, so.
But also, I'm not a drug person, so it's
I'm not either.
Not really my,
I'm not either, so
not
okay.
really my gig, baby.
So there is really, the plot of the film, Peter Fonda plays a I guess a television commercial director, because they show him the very beginning of the movie. Directing, yep.
But he's going to get a divorce and she's
yep.
leaving him or something.
Yep. So
which
then
is
he,
the actual plot. Okay.
So then he goes to...
He's a rich guy.
So then okay. he goes to Bruce Dern and Dennis Hopper. They give him some acid. And then he goes to some home. And I think it's... Is it Bruce Dern's home or is it his home? I don't know. Bruce Dern is there to guide him on his trip.
Yes.
And by the way, Bruce Dern, if I ever go on a trip, that's who I... He is the calmest speaking person. He's like... Oh, yeah, what do you think we're going to, you know?
Yeah.
He's just so, I'm like, oh, yeah.
I don't like people like that. Have emotions.
He can guide
if
with me.
You shouldn't need drugs for emotions. You should have terrible movies to give you emotions.
And the rest of the film is just experimental where he's hallucinating. He
yeah.
thinks he's at places. He's running in the woods. There's, like, unicorns. There's knights in the shining armor. He's, you know, dancing in nightclubs. There's naked women. He pretends to have sex with people. He does have sex with someone later on. Yeah, it's just a big trip. So what this movie... So have you seen Easy Rider?
I have not actually seen Easy Rider.
Okay, so I love Easy Rider. I think it's a great American film, and it definitely has influences of French New Wave and stuff.
Okay.
Now, this movie, Dennis Hopper's in this. Dennis Hopper directed Easy Rider.
Okay, yeah.
So this is how I feel. Now, this movie is not in the same league as Easy Rider, because Easy Rider, I think, is a great
movie. How many of these people were names? I mean, Peter Fonda was
yeah.
part of a nepotism wave, okay?
Well, he was still doing some movies. Dennis Hopper was in, he was a character actor that was in movies for like 10 years
so,
at this point.
So did Roger Corman not have the kind of name where you can't get current stars yet?
Because
he got a lot of future stars in
Peter
the future,
Fonda was...
But nobody was going to show up.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Nicholson wasn't going to show up in 1978 and say, I want to be in your next
yeah.
movie, Roger. Okay.
Which Jack Nicholson wrote this
yes,
film.
Yes, he did. But he doesn't seem to be in it anywhere.
He's not in it. No. He wrote the film. And the reason why he got Jack Nicholson to do it, because he knew Jack Nicholson had experience with LSD. And Roger Corman had a really good experience with LSD as well. And he was like, I want to...
Really?
But he goes, I want to show a neutral way. So I want to show the good and the bad.
Because I guess because of my uninterest in it, I didn't see the good.
All right,
of
right,
this
right,
seemed
right,
like,
right, right.
I don't understand why anybody want to do this. This all looks like a fucking nightmare.
It is.
Okay?
It's a fever dream. And kind of easy.
That doesn't seem like a thing I'd be like, wow, that was cool. No, actively. Like, for instance, right now, the day we're recording this, I had a dream last night.
Yeah.
One of the most fucked up dreams I've ever had.
Yeah.
In that dream, for some reason, and I was in an accident of some sort, and I lost my arms and my legs.
Oh, my God.
And I was just a fucking stump. Okay, and all I could do was like watch movies and shit, and I'm like, and now that we're talking about this movie, I'm like, I don't ever want to do that dream again. But this movie is made by people that go like, cool, I want to have that dream again. No, that was fucking horrible.
Right,
okay?
right. Now I think because Dennis Hopper is in this movie, and it was about like a trip, a little bit of political stuff they throw in there is like Vietnam stuff playing on the in the background.
It's 1967.
Now,
we just saw the headlines. Yeah, Vietnam
now,
was gonna be a thing. Okay.
I feel like this is almost a little bit of a precursor to Easy Rider.
I hadn't even seen Easy Rider, and I'm watching this, and I'm like, I feel like there's some Easy Rider in this fucking movie.
In fact, Dennis Hopper, I think, took some stuff from this film. Like, there's a shot early in the movie where they're at Dennis Hopper's pad or whatever, and while they're getting the drugs. And the camera pans around in, like, a complete 360 or whatever. You know, it just goes all the way around. Then it comes back. It starts with Peter Fonda, goes left, it goes all the way around, sees everybody, and it goes back to Peter Fonda. They do that in Easy Rider as well. So I wonder if, you know, Dennis Hopper lifted that shot. Also,
Or they both could have lifted it from a different source.
Oh, absolutely.
Could have been
absolutely.
Happened.
But then there was some music in the film, too. Like, towards the end of the movie when he's, like, running in the streets and this music's like, that song is in Easy Rider. And I'm like, holy shit. So I was definitely getting these Easy Rider vibes. So narratively, it's just, you know, it's just a guy having a trip. Peter Fonda is not terrific in the film. he's fine.
No.
He's a little flat in the film. Everyone else is fine. But you, for me, you're not watching this movie for the acting. You're watching it to get this weird artsy kind of vibe from it. And I actually kind of dug it. So I dug the film because I saw it as an experimental film with really neat kind of shots and experimental with like quick cutting and editing. And and I thought it was really interesting as a filmmaker. So I actually really liked it. And then later on, Easy Rider took this concept and made it even better.
Made it like a good movie.
Yeah, instead of just
a concept.
Well, it's still concept. It's still not necessarily a plot or anything in Easy Rider either. It's just a bunch of guys just going on a road trip doing drugs. Same kind of thing.
So maybe I don't particularly sound like I'm interested.
I don't even know if you'd like that movie
because
either.
Here's the thing.
I think you'd like it better than this.
When I was, like, when I watched the first one that we watched, Two for the Road, like, I don't like this movie, but I'm pretty sure Austin's going to love this
fucking
movie.
You didn't think
movie.
I'd like this?
This one, I'm like, I'm not sure.
I did.
But I don't like this fucking movie.
No, I didn't think you'd like it.
It really is just not my gig.
Yeah. No,
I was baffled. And then when you say stuff, oh, they want to show both sides, and I'm like, there was a good side? Everything seemed terrible. And at the end of it, he acts like, that was cool. That was fun. And I'm like, I felt like you committed accidental crimes on numerous occasions.
I got a big kick out of that one scene when he was, so he's tripping balls, right? And he comes out, he's in that like closet and he comes out and Bruce Dern is like, looks like he's dead. Right. And then Peter Fonda just takes out his camera and takes the picture. That cracked me up.
Yeah.
I really, it's and then weird. He left and ran.
It's just movie. Maybe it was just too fucking hard. I just couldn't.
Yeah, so this
I couldn't connect with the movie.
No, right.
In any way,
this movie doesn't make sense. It's just a
but it
fever
doesn't have
dream.
To make sense. It just isn't for me.
Right. No, and it's not for everybody. But if you kind of like fever dreams and you like just weird movies in general, and you're interested in drug films,
if you're interested in drug films, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I am not interested in drug films.
Yeah.
Interested in watching movies for our show. Okay? So, yes, I watched it. And I'm like, I'm interested because I've never had any interest until now to watch anything like this. And I'm like, this didn't make me want to watch more.
No, so I liked it. So I'm gonna give it a 3 because and it's short. It's 79 minutes.
Yeah, it's short.
If this was 100 minutes, I wouldn't be giving it a 3.
It's hard. It was 79 minutes, and I'm like...
No, I know. It flew by for me. I liked it. I vibed with it. I just thought it was cool...
I did not vibe. Yeah. You said 3?
Here's a 3.
I gotta go like to a 1.
No, I figured you'd give it a 1.
It wasn't like offensive. No. I'm not anti-drug. I'm mostly confused by anybody would give a shit. Okay?
Well, I wouldn't want to do this.
I don't understand. It didn't look like a positive experience at all.
No. Okay? But this does have a cult following when it came out, and it made some money.
Yeah.
I think it made a $9 million profit.
So, I understand.
Yeah. Well, it was the right time when it came out.
There's a culture. Yeah. There's a group of people that this movie is like, yeah, let's go do that.
Yeah.
My most baffling thing would be leaving the movie and going, yeah, that looked like fun. And I'm like, no, that didn't look like fun. That looked fucking horrible. What's wrong with you people?
Also, this is probably a movie that you go to on LSD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then don't spend the $1.50 to see the movie. Probably have time. Don't spend the 35 cents to see a movie.
Right. To Sir With Love.
This is like a movie that is a much bigger movie than I ever fucking knew. Because I had no knowledge of this movie.
I knew of the film, yeah.
And then, just out of crazy happenstance in the last week, 3 different references to this movie have popped up.
Okay.
On, like, different things I was watching, and I'm like, did I just not understand those references until now?
We're going to click on this just so you can get a kick out of this. To Sir With Love 2.
I noticed that.
1996 American remake.
Is it a remake? I thought it was actually
a sequel. It's a sequel, yeah.
But it does have him.
Made for television.
As the same character.
Yeah. Directed by Peter Bogdanovich? That's fucking weird.
That is really fucking weird.
Peter Bogdanovich, what are you doing? So this is directed by James Clavell. He was also a writer, and so he wrote the screenplay. He plays Thackeray, Sidney Poitier. Love Sidney Poitier. He's a great actor.
Yes. I don't know if he's that great in this.
He's decent.
Yeah, he's decent.
He's fine.
He's not Sidney Poitier level.
He's not giving an Oscar-worthy performance.
No, it's like, he's getting a paycheck for this movie,
He's not giving a bad performance.
No,
because
he's Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
Even in that weird Bill Cosby thing, he was given a good performance.
Yeah.
Even though he fucking directed that. Okay?
You're right. So this, he is From British Guiana? I can't.
Yeah, that's what he's unlike his in reality, he's in this he's British.
Yeah.
In real life he's like Haitian or something,
yeah, I don't know.
I think.
But anyways, yeah. So he's unable to find, because he wants to be an engineer, but he can't find it, so he finds a job teaching kids.
Yeah.
At a secondary school in east of London, which is, the school's bad. It has a lot of bad kids, yeah. And it's an urban
school.
He's in
one of the bad classes.
Yep, he's in one of the worst. School. Yep.
It's not, he's not happy with this job.
Yeah, so the pupils have been rejected from other schools, and he's a replacement for a teacher that just passed away. So now he's back, and they do a lot of vandalism, and they have distasteful pranks. And one of the pranks is taking a girl's sanitary towel and, like, burning it.
Yeah.
And he comes in, and it's it totally enrages him. And
he's
the
most enraged and disgusted he's ever
and
been.
And he makes all the guys leave, and then he tells all the women that they're sluts.
Yes. That's what I'm like.
Like,
oh.
No guy wants a slut. And I'm like, what?
And I'm going to tell you, before
there's
that.
There's so much slut-shaming in this film.
Before that, all of the.
It's a slutty behavior.
Which I'm
like,
says,
yeah.
You mean the fact that they have periods makes them sluts, you weirdo?
And also.
That's all that happened.
Yeah.
It's a sanitary towel. Somebody else burned it. It has nothing to do with sexual intercourse, moron. Okay.
So that was the first scene in the movie where I'm like, what? Like
yeah.
This? You know what?
Up until then, he's just has this job. Some of the students are particularly big assholes.
So
like, I know for a fact later in this movie he's gonna turn them around. I'm interested in how he turns them around. And then that's when he turns them around. And I'm like, that's when he turned them around? That's exactly what they were trying to get. They were trying to get him riled up. He gets riled up
and he punches
a kid better.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that wasn't a boxing.
Yeah.
He didn't like randomly punch a kid. That kid wanted to get punched, literally.
The way
he wanted to punch that teacher who was older and significantly larger than him. I'm like, you're not gonna win this fight, you moron. Sidney Poitier's like 6'4".
The way the kid, the way the kids interact with each other and talk to each other, it's like this movie. For me, felt like that it took place on another planet.
It does feel like
it's like
took place.
How like the way the kids are acting with each other in the classroom, the way the adults talk to each other.
Nobody like anything that makes human sense.
I'm like, I don't recognize any of this from any of my interactions with anyone in my entire life. Why are people talking this way?
Britain in the 60s? Is that what this was? Is this the world was just that different?
Because
I'm going to tell you, don't forget, we watched that other British 60s movie with the space priest guy, okay?
Oh, yeah,
that
thing. That
also felt like a foreign planet many times, and I'm like, what is going on?
The Peter Sellers film.
Yeah, is that just the way they made movies at this time?
So,
is that just the way you were supposed to act in a British movie?
The way that he gets them to behave, though, he treats them like adults. He's like, you know what? I'm treating you like adults, and I'm going to talk to you like an adult, and you're going to act like an adult.
I think it was mostly yelled at him, and then
I love
getting yelled at, so I'm going to do what the guy says now. I'm like, no. In real life, those guys just act even worse because they're getting exactly what they wanted. They pissed you off. Okay?
You're calling me sir, and the boys will be miss, and the boys by their surnames. And then he tells the women, he's like, okay, so now I'm going to teach you about marriage and how to be a good wife. And I'm like, what the
fuck? Holy shit.
It's like,
what is... This movie didn't sound like it made sense in the 60s.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
I don't understand.
I'm just like,
what is going on in this movie? And one of the girls actively falls in super duper crazy love with him.
Oh,
actually, a bunch of the other teachers seem to like totally want to bang him too.
Well,
okay.
So Judy Geeson plays Pamela. Judy Geeson was the one. She was the lady in Brannigan that you thought that was gonna end up with John Wayne, but didn't. They ended up not being together, but yeah. She was. That was 7 years
that
later.
Was weird.
Or 8 years. Because
she
later.
Seemed younger in that than she does in this.
Yeah.
That's weird.
And you know, but that whole thing.
I mean, it made sense that the other teachers go like, that tall black guy is hot as fuck. Yeah, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
But then and the students, it doesn't make no sense that students get crushes on their teachers.
Right.
It's fine. But near the end of this movie, they like dance, and there's some really long shots of them looking at each other, and I'm like, are they gonna fuck? What the fuck's happening?
Exactly.
Are they gonna fuck in the middle of this dance floor? What the hell's going on?
You know, they're about to dance. Will you call me by my first name now? Yes, I will. And
yes,
I'm like,
I will.
What is
also,
going on?
I'll spank you, mommy. Okay?
And it seems like everybody was okay with that. And
movie?
The other thing that I didn't really like in the film either was Susie Kendall plays the other lady teacher. I thought they were gonna have like a romance.
I was hoping
completely.
Because it actually made sense. They're both attractive people. They fuck each other already.
They introduce this kind of maybe romance and do nothing with it.
They do nothing. You could take literally 3 minutes out of this movie, edit that stuff out. Nobody will miss it because it doesn't do anything.
And then also at the, there's that one character that's that mixed, like he's black and white. They introduce him like he's part of the class, but they never show him inside the classroom ever.
No.
And so why was that totally confusing.
Like pasted in later.
It was like,
we need to do this guy, but we already filmed all the classroom scenes. We're just going to act like he's there.
Right.
Just act like he's to the right of the camera. Okay?
And then they had some weird, because the movie, I don't think, is particularly well directed. So,
no, but this movie's like a cultural thing in the UK. Yeah. This movie's not very fucking good.
No.
It's weird.
But
I'm
that
so confused.
When they go to that tour, they tour the museum, and then it's just a montage of still pictures.
Yeah.
Which I'm like,
it's the shittiest museum I've ever fucking seen. It's like, what? We're going on a field trip.
Yeah.
And also, there's at least when he first starts treating them like adults.
Yeah.
He says something to the guys like, you're gonna start liking girls soon. And I'm like, do you think they're 12? Those guys are like
25.
17. and they're even playing like 16, 17.
Yeah.
Did you not start liking girls till you were out of high school?
You're going to start liking girls, and so you're going to want to clean yourselves and wash your hair.
You're
going
to
want
to shave. You're going to act up, because when they see that stinky dick, they ain't going to want to do anything with it. I'm like, what the fuck is... You're weird, dude. You're just a weirdo.
And
quit talking about those teenagers, about how much you kind of want to bang them, but you're not going
to.
So
I will say, the song To Sir With Love, it's number one for a reason. It's an awesome
song.
It's
a good song. It is in the movie, as you said
four
earlier.
Four times.
The movie's only... The movie's an hour and a half movie.
Yeah.
Or so.
Hour 45 minutes, yeah.
Hour and 45 minutes, of which 15 minutes of that is that fucking song.
Yeah. Okay? Because they play it in its entirety the whole time.
It's in the end credits. It happens during the movie on two occasions.
And then at the end credits.
Yeah.
So,
one of the times in the movie, it's just background music. And then it's part of the plot, and that teenage girl has a crush on him.
So that's...
Sings a song to him, and it happens to be this song we already heard.
So that was Lulu, the one with short hair. So she was a real pop singer. So she was in this movie.
Yeah.
And later on, you know what song she sang? Seven years later. Man with a Golden Gun.
Really?
Yes.
Cool.
Great song.
Very cool.
That's one of my favorite Bond songs. So
that's most Bonds have pretty solid.
That song's awesome. But yeah, Lulu directed, but she was only 19.
Except for Doctor No, who doesn't have one in song.
No. For Much with Love kind of does. Lulu was 19 when they filmed this movie, so she was in.
Okay, so at least she's a teenager. Because you're right, some of those guys are. That guy's. Maybe 6 months younger than Sydney. Okay, that guy might be older than Sydney Poitier.
No,
okay?
Sydney is like 40 in the movie.
Yeah, I know, but they don't look very fucking young.
Sydney Poitier came out with 3 films this year. He did Guess Who's Coming to Dinner and In the Heat of the Night.
We've seen one of those. We've seen a sequel to the other one.
Yep. But this is definitely the worst one.
This is the worst. And it's weirdly, like I said, like I've heard just random references to this 60-year-old movie. Yeah. And I'm like, what? People know about this movie? This movie's not very fucking good.
No.
It's really
I didn't enjoy this really movie at all. I'm at a 1.5 on it.
I'm going to give it the same. A 1.5. But I was like sitting there and good. I'm like, I mean, there's a certain amount of enjoyment to the fact that I'm like, I expected this movie to be, this movie's like a thing. It's got Sidney Poitier. I had, before we saw it, I'm like, apparently this is like a movie.
Yeah.
I had just never heard of it because it's like British, okay? Yeah. And it has a song that I've never heard, but went to number one. It's one of the old number one songs that I've never heard, which
I haven't
there
heard
are a surprising number of those songs, okay? And I'm like, okay. And then watching it, I'm like, is this the wrong movie? Is this a shitty remake that it seems to have all the same actors? Why is this movie so shitty?
Speaking of that this movie takes place on another planet, what's up with that opening scene with all those ladies talking on the bus? To each other, and they were just like,
and they're right next to Sydney, and going, "Boy, I like the fuck this dude right here."
Exactly, like, they're right in front of him.
He's right there.
Boy, wouldn't I love a piece of that? And I'm
holy
like, "Holy
shit! Look at that tall, dark, handsome dick. Take your pants off, sister."
That's exactly So it was not
what
good.
The hell, it was really. It starts right off with that, and I'm like, "What's going on?"
Yeah.
Is this the
it's
way
on
the
another
60s
planet?
Are?
Yeah.
Is this? Were old people in the 60s also sexually liberated to such a degree that they would just randomly walk up guys and say, fuck me now,
Our next movie, actually, so our double feature drive-in, two totally different films.
Oh, really? These are different? These movies, it's like one big long movie, okay?
The Dirty Dozen and Don't Make Waves. So, yeah, The Dirty Dozen doesn't probably need a whole lot of introduction. It's directed by Robert Altrich. It's one of the most highly regarded World War II films, action yes. films of all time. Lee Marvin, Ernest Borgnine, Charles Bronson, Jim Brown, John Cassavetes, George Kennedy, Robert Ryan, Donald Sutherland, and Telly Savalas.
Yeah. Plus, like, Trini five Lopez. Other ones were also part of the 12.
Right.
Which ends up sort of being 13 because Lee is right. in there.
Well, that's okay. One of the guys dies off-screen anyways, and then, okay, now well, he's 12.
Well, he dies off-screen right before the final thing. He's in the rest of the movie. And you're right. It's like they couldn't get the actor or something, so they just said, we found him dead in a tree, so we're not going to ever, like, talk about him again. Okay? But he was in the rest of the movie,
right.
and he kind of did a couple of things. He kind of did the least.
So okay? Lee Marvin plays Major Reisman, and he is assigned to... So he's kind of known for being insubordinate and whatever, defies people. And he has this...
Well, it starts right off with that crazy execution.
Oh, yeah.
That execution in the beginning is like...
The guy being
the guy
hung,
is
yeah.
like is like apologizing
I didn't mean to
time.
Do it. I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
And
boom.
They like... And, like, Ernest Borgnine and stuff had sent him there, like, go see this guy get killed. And I'm like, I'm not sure why.
He's
like, it was interesting.
What did you think of
I'm
that?
I'm not sure why that's in the movie, okay?
Yeah.
You want to get a bunch of other guys who were probably going to have that happen, but they're still going to get killed, okay?
Yeah. So he gets assigned to do this job, pretty much like a suicide mission.
Yeah.
Going into this castle with 12 other guys.
Well, they don't really mention what the actual
right.
thing is
well,
until you see it
right.
at the end. In a crazy reveal, which is fucking awesome.
So okay. they're going to go to this castle and kill as many officers as possible. That's what
yep.
they're doing.
That's it.
That's
it's
it.
It's a castle in
right
France.
Before D-Day.
Yep. Kill a whole bunch of them. That'll
yep.
fuck up.
That was
make,
it.
That'll make them all fucked over for D-Day.
Yeah.
Which is D-Day is in like 3 months.
Yeah.
So do it now, okay?
So Lee Marvin... Along with Richard Jekyll, they are training these guys. So you got
that's right. There's kind of 14 people.
Yeah. So then you got Lee Marvin, but then you have you got Bronson and Jim Brown and Cassavetes, who was nominated for this movie, who was pretty good in the film. So that's Franco.
Franco. I think and Franco's like the first one you see of the actual Dirty Dozen.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, I understand why. He's a great character.
Oh, he's a great character in the movie. Yeah. He's,
actually, I would say, astonishingly, the 12 prisoners, and they do it. That's like, we got a long fucking movie. We're going to show all fucking 12 of these people.
Yeah.
We're going to flesh them out to a reasonable degree, and they fucking succeed.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah, they did a really good job with that. So you got, John Cassavetes, Jim Brown, Telly Savalas, who plays Maggot.
Oh.
He is bad man
he's
in this movie.
He's a bad person.
He's an evangelist.
Among bad
and
people.
Rapist.
Yeah, this is the other movie.
Because Lord tells him to chastise. Yeah.
Even more than Sidney Poitier said it.
The Lord
and he means it real.
And he's like, what do you rape all those women? They're like, well, the Lord tells me to chastise these women, you know? And I'm like,
oh. Oh, boy.
And Sutherland plays kind of like the dim-witted.
You get to feel bad for an obvious Nazi woman later. And I'm like, boy, I actually feel bad for that woman.
Yeah.
Because he's a real piece of shit.
Yep. And then Bronson probably has the next most screen time, too.
He's
in there quite a bit.
I would actively say he's the second build character.
Probably.
Even though...
Cassavetes Franco is pretty good.
Is also a big deal until they get to the actual thing.
Yeah.
And then it is mostly Bronson and Lee Marvin are the mains.
Yep.
And everybody else is just background shit.
Yep. So the first two-thirds of this movie is training.
Yes.
Pretty much... So like the hour and 55 mark, and then
it's like 40 minutes of the final thing.
Yeah, like 35 minutes, actually.
But it's good.
Yeah. And so
I had seen this twice before.
I've seen it a few times.
And I had remembered from the previous ones that in the first time, I loved all that training shit. And I was like kind of disappointed in the ending. And then on the second one, I'm like, I love this whole fucking movie. Even the ending, I thought was really good. And this time I'm like... Yeah, I agree with my second time. Okay? That ending was really cool, except for the part where they're actively committing egregious war crimes.
Oh, yeah.
You can't go and capture a bunch of people and then just say, by the way, we're going to blow y'all up and leave. Okay?
Yeah, they blew up the whole fucking thing.
Let all the French people out, and then we're just going to murder everybody.
That was great.
Including, obviously, like spouses and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, you people are good. I guess that's why you go get... convicted criminals.
They're the Dirty Dozen, right? Yeah, yeah. So yeah, he gets convicted criminals to do this, and there's a great little subplot with Robert Ryan, a rival colonel against Lee Marvin, and there's a great scene where they're expecting this general to inspect their army. And so they get sent. So Lee Marvin's like, sends Donald Sutherland out there to pretend. Be a general. Yeah. And he gets out there and he's like goofing around. He's like, "Where are you from? Never heard of it.
Never heard of it."
Lee Marvin pissed him off, though, because.
Never fucking do that shit ever again.
And I'm going to beat your head.
That thing you told me to do? I don't understand.
Well,
you
he didn't want to give himself away, essentially. Yeah.
But that's what generals do. They're assholes.
So that was funny. And Sutherland is great as in the part as that. I thought was really good.
I love the War Games.
Oh, the War Games is great.
The War Games is great because they cheat their fucking asses off.
Oh, yeah.
But it makes sense because that's what they're going to do in the actual thing.
No, right.
They're going to put on Nazi uniforms.
Yeah.
And they're going to cheat their fucking asses off.
So
and
in
that's
this,
why you can't really pick on them.
In this War Game.
War Games.
During this War Games, you have like these blue and red ribbons.
Yeah.
They kept switching them to go on the other team.
And Kennedy was there. And at one point.
George Kennedy's an observer.
And at one point. The first time they do the switch, it's like, I think it was Bronson. And he just says switch. And they just grab other color ones and put those on. He goes, you can't do that. And he goes, well, we're doing it, so fuck you.
We're just going to do this thing.
And after a while, George Kennedy just goes, I'm just going to go along for the ride because this is entertaining as fuck.
Same thing with Ernest Borgnine. There's a scene Ernest Borgnine catches it. And he's just like, you just see his look and he's smiling like, and then he looks at Robert Ryan. I'm like, all right, I'll see you later.
Well, part of it is
Ernest
Borgnine and George Kennedy know the final mission. So they're like, we got to let them do this shit because this is the shit that they're literally training to do. We've been training their asses off to do this shit.
So the War Games
is... So we have to let them do it, okay?
So I do like the movie. I like Dirty Dozen. I don't hold it in high regard as other people do.
Okay, because I fucking love it.
Right. So, and this is, again, this is more of my filmmaker eye. So the the first 10 minutes of the movie, I am not the biggest fan of.
Really?
The pre-title sequence.
Weird. Because I love that all this shit happens, and then you don't even see the actual name of the fucking movie until all 12 of them are lined up.
No, I
and
like
I
that.
Go,
oh, no. That's
30 dozen. And I'm like,
we haven't
fucking seen that yet. That's awesome.
I like that. There's this thing, like, so they're having like a 10-minute briefing, right? The briefing's fine. I don't like the way it's filmed because the thing is, so one thing I don't like in film, this is where I'm going to lose people maybe, but one thing I don't like in movies is coverage. Coverage is something where you set up a master shot, right?
Okay.
And you film the scene. Then you get coverage by, okay, let's get this guy's close up. Let's get this guy's close up. And I think that there is such a thing as over covering a scene. So they're in this room and there's like 20 different angles going on. Like now it's overhead. Now it's up here. Now it's down here. And it does this quick editing. And I'm like, how about just some really neat master shots and just make it have a rhythm. And I don't think the movie has a rhythm. I don't think it's lit very well, to be honest, either. I think some of the cinematography is just kind of weird in the movie.
As far as the lighting is concerned.
I mean, some of the camera work is good, but some of the lighting I don't really care for.
I don't disagree with anything you said.
Yeah.
Except for where I still loved it.
Okay. Yeah, right. And so I think that it, and the thing that makes it good, so one thing I didn't mention, because we already talked about Lee Marvin and Point Blank. Lee Marvin's fucking great in this movie. I love him in this movie.
He's so fucking good in this movie.
He's really, really good. He carries the movie, and he's got all these other people with support, and most of them are pretty good too.
Yeah.
But Lee Marvin is awesome in the film. He has a certain sass to him. So in Point Blank, it's funny because because a lot of people just compare Lee Marvin like, oh, he's kind of the same in every movie. I will disagree with that. If you watch their performances back to back, Point Blank and Dirty Dozen, Point Blank, he is more stoic. He's
Point
more
Blank,
serious.
He doesn't talk for like the first half hour.
Right.
I was wondering, I'm like, is he going to be a completely unspeaking character in this movie?
Yeah.
Which I would have ranked it up much higher if they had gone all the way on
I think so,
okay?
Yeah. But in this movie, he's sassy, he's a smartass.
He's a smartass, and he is an active ass-kicker, but he also knows, I have to do this just right, because any one of these fuckers gets me in the bad side, I'm fucking dead. Okay?
Right.
Oh, they're all psycho murderers.
I really like
okay?
Clint Walker, too. Clint Walker's that meathead guy, Posey. Like, he's big. That guy's huge.
He's kind of... There's the next movie kind of has a big guy, but he's much bigger than this dude.
So I thought, yeah, so all the characters and stuff are great. Yeah, Telly Savalas is awesome.
God, he's so good at being absolute slime.
So at the end of the movie, so spoiler alert, so at the end of the movie, so they're getting ready to start shooting everybody and all the bombs are going to go off. But he does it a little early because he gets a wave of this, he sees this girl and he starts going after her. And then Jim Brown is trying to stop him. And he starts shooting at Jim Brown, and you're like, holy shit. So he's shooting at all the other people.
He literally tries to kill some of the other dozen.
Yep.
And so Jim Brown murders him.
Yeah, oh yeah. And the other
which he has to.
The other thing that I don't care for in this movie are some of the death scenes are just literally people grabbing their chest and falling to the ground.
That definitely is...
It's not that good.
We're past that point.
Right.
Although I will say, Franco's death, you don't see any blood, but it is weirdly... my favorite one, because he's just sitting there, happy, gets shot, and is immediately dead and falls over.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, like mid-sentence, he's dead.
So that was great. But then right after that, it all of a sudden goes like, okay, the movie's over. And I'm like, whoa, hold on. They're still leaving.
They're still leaving, and there's still a whole shit ton of Nazis chasing them.
And I'm like, so I don't know that ending. And this isn't, I've always felt that way about the ending. I'm like, it always was like, it just ends in a weird spot.
It does just end. It does at the end. It does say the names of the characters who died, and they have Telly Savalas' character in there who died in the line of duty. I'm like, I mean, he was killed. it wasn't helping anybody.
So yeah,
okay.
So and there's a couple other Men on a Mission movies that I like better, and I'm not going to mention them because we might review them in future episodes. But but there's some that I like. This is one of the most well-known ones. So when people mention Dirty Dozen, I'll go and say, actually, I like this and this better. Hopefully, we'll get to that. But yeah, but it's not a bad movie.
It's not my favorite movie in the world.
Right. No.
For some reason, periodically, my American white man really comes up in this movie. I'm like, God damn it. There are 12 criminals.
Yeah.
You fucking learn their names as you're watching. And I'm like, I actually give a shit about those pieces of shit except for Megan. Megan can fucking go to hell. Okay?
Yeah, John Cassavetes is a good arc in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, during the thing, so you kind of build him up like, oh, he's going to turn around and be this big hero.
He's a literal fucking hero at the end.
Well,
and then
he does. But
dies horribly.
But the first part of that mission, though, he spends like almost the whole first half of the mission with his foot stuck up in the roof.
Oh, yeah, he does.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
That was suspenseful.
See,
that's
the thing about, I remember it being, there is a Jim Brown moment at the end.
Oh.
Where it's like, you gotta put Jim Brown running, and he's gotta do zigzaggy runs.
Because he's fucking
Jim Brown.
Yeah, it's like,
we'll figure out a way to do it.
That's a great death scene, though.
He's gonna drop all the grenades in and run. And I'm like, you could have figured out a better way to do that.
It's an awesome scene.
And then he also dies.
He gets
killed by a bunch of Nazis while he's running.
Yep.
And that's when they all look and they're like, holy shit, he's dead. He just fucking died while he's running here. And they're all like, cheering him on. I do get to mention
the scene when they're throwing all their grenades in and like all the other people are like trying to push
them. Oh, that is amazing.
But I'm like, you're not going to be able to push those grenades out. What
you're saying is what they should have done is go, well, I'm going to be like a cartoon character and just sit there and hold a sign up and say,
how about,
well, fuck this life.
How about walk away? How about get away from the grenades?
It's nothing they can do about it. There's fucking like 30 of them they just dropped in there.
Yeah.
No, none of them had been pulled yet. They don't know that.
No.
They're going to blow up later when they throw one live one in there. And they're like, fuck you, you're dead now.
So, yeah, no, like I said, with all my complaints and everything, it's still an enjoyable film. It's a 3 for me. You probably give it a higher.
I'm giving it a 3.5.
Yeah.
It's really, the fact that they pull it off.
Yeah.
The third time watching it now, I'm like, God, they fucking do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't even make sense that there are 12 of these people.
Well, Lee Marvin really saves it for me.
Fucking disgusting criminals.
Yeah.
Even the big guy, he punched a guy once.
And his jaw
smashed into his face.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm like, I mean, no, that guy can do it. That guy's legitimately really intimidating.
He definitely could have done that.
Because to such a degree, how the variety. They have them stand tallest to shortest. And I'm like, boy, Jim Brown's like third. Okay? How big are those fuckers? Jim Brown is not a small dude.
So
okay?
Robert Aldridge, the director, he liked to fuck around and do pranks. And he pissed off Charles Bronson by putting him next to Clint Walker, and Donald Sutherland, who are like the two tallest guys, and Charles Bronson, you know, he's probably 5'7".
He's on the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
Now, Franco is like number one in the bottom. He's really short.
And well, it's interesting. So I don't know if you know this, but John Cassavetes, who played Franco, he is a kind of an independent filmmaker. So he did. So he made a lot of like artsy movies in the 60s and 70s, like Shadows and Faces and Women Under the Influence and. And then he was married to Gina Rollins.
Oh, wow. Holy shit.
Yeah. So, but he would do these acting things on the side. He was a good actor.
He was good. He
didn't necessarily like acting, but he was good at it. So he would make money doing this, and then he would use that money to make these small independent movies.
Cool. Kind of
interesting. Yeah.
Very cool.
Dirty Dozen.
Very cool. Dirty Dozen.
Don't Make Waves.
Y'all know about this movie, right? We don't need to give a synopsis. Everybody's heard of it. It's a totally normal movie that everybody's heard of.
So Tony Curtis, Claudia Cardinelli, and Sharon Tate.
Sharon Tate. Animated credits. I need to bring that up. This is the other one with animated credits.
I like the animated credits.
The animated credits are pretty good.
And the song was by The Birds.
The Birds. I'm watching this and I'm like, this movie starts off pretty kick-ass.
Yeah. So the opening of the movie, it starts off with Carlo, who they don't really say, but you kind of, like, he's a tourist, I guess. And According to Wikipedia here, he's a tourist.
Okay.
But sure.
He lives there now.
So he's visiting California's West Coast, right? And he's sitting there and you see this lady painting. It's Claudia Cardinelli, right?
Yeah.
And that's, get to her character name. It's Laura.
That's the weird thing about this movie. It starts off and I'm like, this movie might be really good because I'm really enjoying the shit out of it.
Right. So this opening was really neat because it had like, she's like painting. And then, like, her painting, like, flies away or whatever. And then, but then she bumps into Tony Curtis's car. And it's, Tony Curtis's car goes down, like, this, like, cliff.
Oh, yeah, it's nuts.
And then crashes into a bus, or almost does.
Yeah.
And then,
his car's fucked.
Right. And then Claudia comes out, and she starts smoking. And then she's yelling at him about, like, you're in the way. You almost made me get in an accident. And she sets his car on fire.
Yeah.
And then
his pants get on fire.
He takes
his pants off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this movie's fucking amazing.
And then
I didn't think Tony Curtis was this funny.
And then he was in
and he's been in comedies before. He's really
that
funny
we've
in
seen.
This. Yeah.
Oh no.
I think it's pretty fucking funny.
His comic timing is really funny in this movie.
Yeah, it's really good.
Well, in fact, that one scene when he's trying to stop the car, that is like almost Charlie Chaplin type stuff.
I was watching that and I'm like, this is the second movie for this season, for this episode.
Yeah.
With a runaway car, because that happens in the first movie like three times.
But
because they don't know how to push a fucking car right.
It was funnier than this.
Oh, it's 100 times funnier than this.
But the way Tony Curtis is like, his face, he's on top of the car, he's in front of the car.
Yeah.
He's like trying to
holy
get this.
Shit, he's like good at this.
Yeah.
And he's clumsy a few times later, and I'm like, he's really fucking good at
this clumsy thing. Thought he was really, really good in the movie.
Because we've seen him in other movies, and I'm like, he's okay. And this, I'm like, fuck, he's like really good.
No, I agree. So this isn't my favorite movie that he was in, but this is probably my favorite performance of his.
Yeah, I agree. Because in actuality, this movie starts off good and it
kind of
starts going down as the movie goes along.
Not that it's a terrible movie.
No, it's not a terrible movie, by any stretch.
But it's not, like, The Great Race is a better movie, but he's better in this movie, I think.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so Sharon Tate plays Malibu, and so he gets taken in by Claudia, but then her boyfriend. Yeah. Because she's a mistress of some guy.
Yeah.
Robert Weber comes in, who's really good in the movie, too.
He is good as a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
He's good.
Robert Weber comes in, and then so he's just like, who are you? And he's like, get out of here. And then so, you know. Yeah. And then so he's.
No, here's the one of the best parts is she explains it to him, and he just says, yeah, I believe you. And even.
And she was like, what?
And even Tony Curtis is like, I wouldn't believe that. It's the stupidest story in the world. They're like,
But it was the truth.
But it's the truth.
Yeah.
It's like, also, I actually think, and they didn't say it, it's just that he knows she is a terrible actor. Okay? Because she even said it. I'm a really bad actor.
She was
in some shitty movie.
She didn't say that.
I'm also a bad actor. So he's like, so she can't lie.
Yeah.
Okay? She's super obvious if she lies. So this is the truth. Okay?
So he goes, stays on the beach, and he gets up in the morning, and then he goes for a swim.
That's why it turns into somewhat of a beach movie.
Yeah, a little bit. But he gets kind of like run over by a bunch of people surfing.
Yeah.
And passes out. Sharon Tate gives him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
Yep.
You know? And, weird.
And then he's, like, watching on a trampoline and getting, like, Huh? And I'm like,
well, no, when he wakes up, he was, well,
oh yeah, he just actually, sees when, her, he just sees this stunningly hot chick.
First she's dragging him, and he looks up, and the first thing you see is her ass. Like,
yeah.
And then he's like, huh?
I think at that point he starts faking it. So
he can get some mouth-to-mouth recitation. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of Tony Curtis Skeeve in it.
It's pretty
but,
fucking solid, actually. Right, right, right.
So there's a lot of mix-up stuff. But anyway, so now he's trying to go for Malibu. And the whole time, you know, like,
yeah,
he's kind of telling Claudia about it, too. He's like, whatever, because they're not really romantically involved. Because he's trying to make sure that Robert
she's actively trying to help him because she basically ruined his life. Okay.
And then
she's like, you're going to sleep here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sleep over there. And even at that point, he's like, he just assumes they're going to fuck.
Well, and then
he's not overly interested. Though I hate this super attractive lady. I'm like, are you not interested in her?
In my opinion, I think she's more attractive than Sharon Tate, but...
I think they're pretty comparably attractive. Well, there's also a third woman later on, and I'm like, this movie's full of attractive people. Okay?
So she...
Because actually, Tony Curtis, I think, looks better in this than he did in Houdini 10 years earlier.
Yeah, and he was like, I mean? he was 42 in this movie.
Yeah,
he looks really
fucking good.
He looks fantastic, yeah. Except, you know, you're like, wow, he's really fit. And then you see Malibu's boyfriend, played by David Draper, who's a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy
shit,
that's
when I really started noticing. I'm like, did they dub his voice?
Oh, I don't know. That's
because there's
question.
Some real heavy-duty dubbing that happens, like, as the movie goes along, it gets worse and worse. Periodically, mouths move in completely unrelated fashion to what people are saying, and I'm like, what happened to this movie? They change the plot near it later on?
But then, he wants a job, I guess. So he blackmails Robert Weber to get a job at his pool place where he sells pools or whatever, installs pools.
Yeah.
And so that's what he's working there now. He's a salesman. Claudia helps him get this house that he didn't really want to buy. It's his house, and it's like sitting up on like a cliff or whatever.
Yeah.
And
well,
then,
he kind of tricks himself into having to buy it.
Yeah.
Kind of. Because he's kind of con artisting.
He is.
He's okay at it.
He's pretty good at it.
Okay?
No.
And Jim Backus shows up.
As himself?
As Jim Backus! And I'm like, oh, Jim Backus is in there. And then halfway through the scene, he goes, oh, you're Jim Backus. And I'm like, well, he's playing himself?
Do you want me to do the Mr. Magoo?
And he starts doing Mr. Magoo shit. And I'm like, he's fucking playing Jim Backus! And not even like a parody of Jim Backus.
And that was his wife,
the real
too.
Fucking Jim
Backus. And that
Backus.
Was his real wife.
That was the actual Lovey?
That was his
that
wife.
That was actual Lovey Howell. Okay?
That was his wife, yeah.
Crazy.
Henny Backus.
It was like
scene.
Henny's in it
so
playing
weird.
Himself. And I'm like,
yeah.
This movie's fucking cool as fuck, man.
But then Edgar Bergen, who is known for doing like the ventriloquist to Charlie McCarthy, he plays Madame Lavina, which is
that was him.
Yeah, he's okay in the movie.
He's weird.
Yeah,
he's successfully weird.
So the thing is, one of the skeevy things Tony Curtis does, he's trying to convince.
Oh, yeah, this is the worst thing he does.
Right.
Okay.
He's trying to convince Malibu's boyfriend that because he's trying to. He's getting ready for bodybuilding competitions. And he's saying, like...
And unlike other movies where they'll say that, and I'm like, no, that dude's legit, okay?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy shit, is that dude fucking ripped and huge.
So what he was trying... So he's trying to get him to do this.
Guy was up against Arnold.
So, right.
When Arnold was
now,
up and coming.
When... So he's trying to get in Sharon Tate's pants. To get there, he's trying to, you know, break up
their
relationship.
And
by doing that, he's saying, you know what? Sex ruins... You know, your energy and your stamina, and so you shouldn't have sex anymore. And so he breaks it off or says, we're not having sex anymore.
Well, he gets that psychic astrologist guy to, like, really double down on this. Oh, my. Because he's, like, a huge fan of him. He reads his, like, articles in the newspapers or whatever.
So he goes, I'll
get him to say it.
Yep. I'll buy you a pool.
Yeah, I'll give him, like, a super deal on a pool. I'm not buying it for him, okay?
Yeah,
I'm just going to make it cheaper for
him. Yeah.
Because I'm not going to take a commission.
Right.
Okay?
So then he tries to get with Sharon Tate. But then it's weird when something, you know, because he does make it with Sharon Tate. But then he's, like.
I didn't understand because she was so uninterested. She never even showed the inkling of interest.
No.
And then he just says, I love you. And she goes, really, you love me? And I'm like, was Sharon Tate terrible at acting? Or is this just a bad movie?
Yeah, okay. I think it was more the writing of the character than anything. I don't think it was anything to do with Sharon Tate.
But one of the things I did read about, she did not like making this movie.
No, I read that
too. And you can fucking tell.
Yep.
Boy, she never looks like she's having fun.
Then they have the skydiving scene, which we found out that when a stuntman died during the film.
Yeah, that's crazy. Because that crazy, because she's a skydiver. She's like a professional skydiver in this. Which I'm like, okay, whatever. And then she could be professionally super hot. It's basically what her
I did like that scene when they were going to jump for that publicity stunt. Tony Curtis falls out and they're trying to, and she's trying to give him a parachute. That goes away. And then she's like, hold on to me.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fun scene.
No, it was fun.
I
it was
that.
Actually a really fantastic parachute scene.
Yep.
And then after the movie's done, I read about it, and I'm like, the guy who was filming him died.
Yes.
Because he
drowned in the Pacific Ocean.
He drowned in the Pacific Ocean because he tried to save the film, which they did get, and then they used it in the fucking movie. And I'm like, the thing I was watching killed a guy?
Yeah.
God damn you, psychos.
But the movie ends with all of the principal cast with all the couples in there. So you got like Robert Weber and his wife and Tony Curtis and Claudia and then Sharon Tate and Harry. And they're all at his place during the storm and a mudslide takes down the house.
That's fucking fantastic.
That was crazy.
All the house stuff at the end is like, more budget did this movie have?
Yeah.
Because that house slides down.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and then the sets inside.
They fucking did it.
Yeah.
They took a house, they flipped it over and slid it down a fucking hill. And I'm like, holy shit.
It was pretty neat. So I thought that was cool. But then just how the way it ends, and I'm like,
yeah.
And then Tony Curtis ends up with Claudia, which there was no indication that was going to happen. Really.
I was like, I knew he was going to end up with one of them. And then he got hooked up with Sharon Tate, and I'm like, this can't last. If this is the way it goes,
well,
this is dumb.
Well, after he
also,
has sex
it's
with...
it's going to be dumb with the other thing.
Well,
it's
after
just
he
dumb.
Has after he has sex with Sharon Tate, like, she's sitting there eating chips, and he's like, seems disgusted by it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, he's just trying to sleep.
Yeah.
Was
I
it a, like,
I
got the impression that it wasn't a good sexual experience, actually.
I guess so.
I got the impression.
I guess. But also, her character in the movie never has ever shown joy.
No,
even
she doesn't really
her
smile.
Super fucking good looking.
No, she doesn't.
Super buff boyfriend shows up, which is actually when they're in upside down
house. Yeah, yeah.
He just randomly shows up, and as he's walking up, because he has found out that the
looks like he's gonna beat him up, right?
Yeah,
that was a
great.
Funny scene.
He's slowly taking his shirt off, and I'm like,
but then he rings his
he
shirt,
just rings it out, and he sits down. You shouldn't have done that. I'm like, that. I'm like, why did this guy not go? Because he did a really good job in that scene. Okay.
Yeah, so I will say, yes. So the first half of this movie, this is
correct.
Pretty dang good.
This is pretty good.
And the movie never gets bad, but I don't really like the way how... I wish they would have had an indication that him and Claudia should have been together. The whole thing with Sharon Tate's like, I love you.
Claudia kind of eventually turns and says, no, you said you didn't have any friends. Now you got all these female friends.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're not in a relationship. Why are you fucking doing
this?
I don't understand. Until, like, literally 2 minutes ago, you didn't give a shit about him, okay?
And then the whole thing with, you know, Tony Curtis and Sharon Tate. Just, like,
that
whole thing.
Sense.
Like,
and
I love you.
The adulterer and his wife, she's getting a divorce. Then she just changes her mind.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they get back together? She gives him 51% of the company out of the blue? The end of this movie really kind of wrecks this movie.
It does. It's funny.
They need to come up with a way to make this movie not horseshit.
I mean, they did have a cool ending with the house going down, but then the way it wraps
the relationship's pairing up.
Yep.
It makes perfect sense. And I wanted Sharon Tate to get back with her buff boyfriend.
I did too.
That's the only one of the three that should have happened.
Yep.
Everybody else should be fucking single for life, okay? Well, not Claudia. Claudia should have a boyfriend.
This
should be that shitty guy.
This is a totally watchable film. And like I said, the first half is actually pretty good. And Tony Curtis is pretty good throughout the film.
He's actually
like, he's
really
funny.
Good.
He has good comic timing, some good physical humor.
He said he got like a cut of the ticket too or something.
Yeah.
That's why, maybe one of the reasons why he said,
he's got some
I'm
good
gonna
physical
really double
comedy.
Down because I want all that fucking money.
He's got some good physical comedy, so I can't give it a full recommendation. I can give you a recommendation with some reservations, so it's a 2.5.
I'm almost going 2.5 because as much as this movie's almost like a 3, maybe even a 3.5 star movie.
Oh, it could have been. It could have been.
When it fails so hard.
Yeah, it
and
just...
I'm like, But it's also a movie that I'll probably be willing to watch some other time.
I would not watch
this.
Now
we're back into the present.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a copy of this fucking movie that's most bullshit. Okay?
Yeah, I think you can rent it on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, you can rent it for like $3. I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably not.
I don't think any modern copies of this look like anything.
I don't know if it's available.
DVD. Not even like a good DVD transfer.
Yeah, I don't even know. DVD. This wasn't a terrible film. And it's like, I almost want to recommend it because there's some things I really, really liked.
There are some things in this movie that I'm like, this is the biggest surprise.
Yeah. But it does. But it
in
still doesn't work in the end.
In either direction, I'm like,
oh,
this movie's a lot better than I expected. This movie that nobody's fucking heard of. Okay?
So you know why some of the physical comedy works, and I think I'm gonna blame the stuff that doesn't work on the script.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But
the director
is Alexander Mackendrick. You know what he directed?
No.
Lady Killers.
Oh,
yes.
Really? This is like when he came to America.
This was his last film.
Did he die or something, or just retire?
He might have died soon after that.
I hope he retired and didn't die until he was 950.
No, he died in 93, so yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
So that was his last film.
He got almost 3 years, though.
This was his last film.
Almost 30 more years.
And he directed Tony Curtis in a serious movie called Sweet Smell of Success in 1957.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, so this guy's not unfamiliar with comedy. That's why some of those set pieces, like the house.
Oh, yeah.
That's why
that
it works.
That makes sense.
Because he directed Lady Killers.
He could make that shit work 10 years earlier in Lady Killers.
Right. If he had a better script, I think we would be talking about this film a little more.
I think it literally wouldn't even take that much of a tweak.
No, I don't think so.
Slightly better script and fix some of the audio goofiness. Because sometimes I'm like, what's going on with the voice?
Right. Okay? Well, that's it. That was our
that's
trip.
That's good.
Best movies, Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Yeah, it's still that.
Yeah.
Dirty Dozen's pretty fucking
solid. No, Thoroughly Modern Millie is easily my favorite.
Is
Don't Make Waves, even though we don't recommend it.
Yeah. It's still,
kind of.
I don't not recommend it. It's just like, it's better than you would think, okay?
So for me, the worst film for you is either Two for the Road or The Trip. Road for me is Two, Sir, with Love.
It's Two for the Road. The Trip, I don't think it's a bad movie.
Yeah.
It's just not a movie for me. Having watched Two for the Road, I know you liked it. I actually just think it's a bad movie.
I think Two, Sir, with Love's a bad movie.
Oh, you're right. God, that is a bad movie.
Like,
that's actually...
Like, Two for the Road's
actually
good filmmaking.
God damn it, I might have to change it. My biggest surprise might be just how bad
To Serve with Love is. It was not good.
Because I'm like, how is this movie this not good? This actively terrible.
So lead
in
actor,
every way to make a bad movie. It's like not particularly well acted or written or even like make sense this way.
So lead actor, I'm going to go Lee Marvin, Dirty Dozen.
Yes, I'm going Lee Marvin.
He's so good in that movie.
It's got to be Lee Marvin, I think.
And
although Tony Curtis is pretty fucking solid.
Yeah,
but he's not Lee Marvin. But
he's surprisingly solid in that. I was surprised with that. Actress for me is probably going to be Julie Andrews.
I do think Mary Tyler Moore is a supporting role.
She's supporting,
Also, I wouldn't even give her the award.
No. I actually like, as much as you didn't like the movie, I liked Audrey Hepburn in Two for the Road, so.
She's the better of the two.
Yeah.
But she's not, you know, Julie Andrews.
Good. No. Supporting actress. Oh, geez.
Supporting actress.
Probably.
I thought I had one in here.
Oh, it's going to be,
Carol
Channing.
I'm going to tell you, it's not in Dirty Dozen, because I don't think there's a single female. No, there are.
There's actually
that Nazi lady at the end is actively terrifying.
No, but there's the...
She's fucking good.
No, they bring the
girl. Oh, yeah,
it's again.
Got all those ladies, too. But that Nazi lady is actually really good.
Yeah.
But I don't know her name, and I'm not kidding.
Right.
She's a fucking Nazi.
Right.
Okay?
But no, I would give it to,
It's Carol Channing.
She's so good.
Carol Channing is fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah, okay? She's very, very good.
Did we give... Supporting actor?
No.
Okay.
What do I... Oh, it's John Cassavetes.
Yeah,
as Franco.
It's probably John Cassavetes. Yeah. I'm looking at the other movies to try
to remember. Maybe even Telly Savalas.
Telly is really good.
But...
God, when... Actually, I'm giving it to Telly Savalas.
Okay, I'm going to go to Cassavetes.
Because when he's on screen, I'm like, holy fuck. That guy is scary.
I do love Telly Savalas.
That guy
Kojak.
Is scary.
Yeah, yeah.
And as much as Franco does a good job of being a guy you don't like, who turns into a guy, I'm like... I'm rooting for Telly Savalas is so vile, but actively good at it.
He's
and I'm
really
like,
good.
This guy went into have a career as like a TV hero. Holy shit, he did get typecast somehow because holy fuck is he evil.
He's
in this movie.
Really evil in that movie. That's good. I actually liked almost all of the movies. So To Serve with Love was the only one I actively didn't like.
I really actively only dislike two of them. That one of them is To Serve with Love, which is the most confusing. Because The Trip is one that I don't know.
It's just not for you.
It's just not for me.
Yeah.
It's not a bad movie, but also it's just not really even a movie in my head because I'm like, I don't care.
It's just the one you were mentioning things
in the description. I'm like, I don't remember any of this shit because I barely remember this movie. Okay.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so that's it. Until we do this again, I'm Austin Kennedy.
It's called Next Time.
I'm going to say time later. I'm Austin Kennedy.
I'm Tim Kaiser.
We'll see you next time.
There. Okay.
All right. Goodbye.
I thought you had forgotten.
See you next, Tim.
Yes, better.
Okay.